I'm Edgar B. Herwick III, and this is Boston Public Radio. Now, it probably doesn't surprise you that in the 1970s, there was a somewhat disreputable honky-tonk of a bar called the Hillbilly Ranch, with live music most nights. Now, it's probably no surprise that country music legend Tex Ritter and trucking music pioneer Dick Curless were among some of the acts who played there. But what might surprise you is that the Hillbilly Ranch was located in downtown Boston, Massachusetts. It's just one of the many places captured in Boston photographer Henry Hornstein's new book, Honky Tonk. This is a collection of photographs from a bygone era in country music and in America. And Henry's with me now in the studio to talk a little bit about it and to listen to some country music. Henry, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Henry.
So I want to start, we'll talk about the Hillbilly Ranch and Boston in a minute, but I want to start by playing a piece of music that I think maybe is going to spark a story from you. So let's just go right to it. This is the inimitable Johnny Cash, and this is a tune called I Can't Help It If I'm Still in Love With You.
Today I passed you on the street, and my heart fell at your feet. I can't help it if I'm still in love with you. Somebody else stood by your side.
All right, so this is from a record that Johnny Cash did. Johnny Cash sings Hank Williams, that played a pretty important role in your development, right?
Oh, yeah. This is from a Sun recording of 1955 or so. And I know that because I grew up in New Bedford, Massachusetts, and I used to go to the Melody Tent there in downtown New Bedford when I was 7, 8, 9 years old.
The Melody Tent was a record store?
Oh, yeah, it was a record store. Yeah. And there was a guy down there, Paul Clayton, who was a folk singer of wailing songs. New Bedford was a great wailing capital, yeah, as many people know. And I had a dollar in my hand, which was a lot of money for an 8 or 9 year old kid in those days. And Paul said to me, "You got to buy this." And he gave me, handed me Johnny Cash sings Hank Williams on Sun Records. And that was the first record I ever bought and listened to.
And you were hooked.
I was hooked, but I didn't know it was country music.
Yeah. It was music.
What Paul told me to buy.
So, I mean, I think the first thing people think of, a lot of people think of when they think about country music, is they think the South.
Right.
And yet you're from Massachusetts. You're talking about a guy who's into wailing music in Massachusetts. You spent a lot of time listening to music and then photographing people who were interested in this music. And you came to found that it's not necessarily to do with the South. Is that right?
No, it's all over. And I spent a week in Maine a couple of weeks ago, and all you heard was country music in,
yeah,
Maine. And it's a rural music originally, I think. And we're not a historian of this exactly, but a photographer. But it comes from the rural part of this country for sure. And in the West, the cowboy music and so forth. And it came north, and it came to the cities of the North and Midwest and so forth after World War II and after the Korean War, when people from the military came back. They didn't have any work in their small towns or rural communities, so they went to the big city and looked for factory work or whatever kind of work they could get. And Boston was one of the places they came to.
And so Boston, there was a time in Boston where this music was happening, not just in people's record players, right? But like we mentioned in
live
the opening,
joint.
The Hillbilly Ranch and,
yeah,
other places.
Beer joints.
Yeah.
There was a Quincy shipyard and the Charlestown Naval Yard, and they were very, very active in those days. And on the weekends at nights, people who worked there, and among other people, including Tex Logan, who was getting his PhD at MIT and worked for Bell Labs later, they used to go down there and play and listen and, you know, maybe meet a girlfriend or have a couple of cold ones.
So I would imagine, looking through your book, you've got a number of photographs that were taken at the Hillbilly Ranch here in Boston. Most of them in the 70s, 72, 76, 78, somewhere around that territory. So have you had a few cold ones at the Hillbilly Ranch?
Oh, maybe a few. But, you know, I think it closed in the 1980s, and I'm not exactly sure. It's a transportation building located. There used to be a Greyhound or a Trailways bus station, and then the Hillbilly Ranch next door. And so that's pretty much, you know, a place I used to hang out at. In those days, it was kind of the hippie times.
Yeah.
There was a little bit of battle between the hippies and the rednecks and the, you know, and so forth and so on.
Our version of the punks versus the mods.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, there was a little bit of that going on. But the Hillbilly Ranch was cool. The musicians welcomed everybody, and the music, if you love the music and love the beer, you were good.
So there's I want to play a little bit of music here, which is something that you turned me on to. And this is a guy by the name of John Lincoln Wright, who's local.
Just passed away this year, actually.
And this is a tune that he wrote right after the Hillbilly Ranch was torn down. Let's hear a little bit of that tune right now. I mean, you're hearing legitimate country music coming out of a guy who's right here in Boston.
Well, he was actually from Maine, John Lincoln Wright originally, then came down here and played had a band, I think they were called the Beacon Street Union, an early, like, 60s rock band that had a couple of hits and then disappeared and started a country band. And the Sour Mash Boys was the name of his band. And what I loved about the Hillbilly Ranch and places like that. The Indian Ranch is one that exists still in Webster, Mass. It's an outdoor venue, but it's a place that the people who love the music go to, and to me, it's the soul of the music, kind of. And I try to photograph the people there and the people who enjoy the music. And looking back at it, you see it as a kind of time warp of the 70s, and trying to preserve that area and who those people were and what they did. And the Hillbilly Ranch was a perfect place for me.
What was it about this place or this world that made you want to kind of get that camera out and start taking pictures? I mean, I think a lot of people get into music, they go to shows, they start to get into that world, but yet you started to document it.
Yeah. Well, I started my adult life as a historian, or a would-be historian. I studied history, and then I transitioned to photography, and I didn't really know much about art, but I did know a little bit about history, and I felt, going into photography, the thing I could do and maybe contribute was really being a historian with a camera, preserving a culture, preserving a world that I really loved. And my teacher was a man named Harry Callahan. Some of your listeners may know, a very well-known photographer.
Sure.
And he told me that I should photograph the things I love. And and he asked me what I loved, and I said, I love country music, and I love horse racing. He said, well, why don't you shoot that? Because even if you get bad pictures, you'll have a good time.
Yeah. So I'm talking with Henry Horenstein. He's a photographer, Boston-based photographer, author of Honky Tonk, Portraits of Country Music. I looked through this book of photographs, which is incredible. And you've used the word time warp. I mean, it sort of documents a slice of American life and a particular time. And it seems to break down into a couple of categories. One of the things you're taking photos of are the musicians themselves. They're, what's seemingly sort of portraits. Some of them are moments, backstage moments, stuff like that. Some of them are a little bit more staged, full sort of, portraits of some of them. One of the people you captured is somebody who would eventually be a country music and then a pop music legend. That's Dolly Parton. I want to hear a little bit about, I want to hear right now, we're going to listen to a little bit of the music that she was playing at the time when you captured her. And then I want you to talk about this photograph you took of Dolly Parton that's in this book.
As she sewed, she told a story from the Bible she had read about a coat of many colors Joseph wore, and then she said, perhaps this coat will bring you good luck and happiness, and I just couldn't wait to wear it, and Mama blessed it with a kiss. My coat of many colors that my mama made for me, made only from rags, but I wore it so proudly. Although we had no.
Tell us about Dolly Parton in 1972.
Well, Dolly Parton was the girl singer in the Porter Wagoner band. He always had one girl singer, and she was usually blonde. And I believe he signed them up to a 6-year contract, something like that, and then they would go on. And Dolly started having hits about that time. When I photographed her, Jolene was a hit at the time, and the Mule Skinner Blues, I think she had a hit on, and maybe Coat of Many Colors. I can't exactly remember, but people who knew the music knew Dolly. Dolly, but she wasn't well known, and she was still traveling with the Porter Wagoner Band, and they came to the Symphony Hall to do a show, and we found out about it. Myself, Marion Layton, who was one of the founders of Rounder Records, and Ken Irwin, who was also one of the founders of Rounder Records. Anyway, the three of us were talking, and we said we ought to go meet her and interview her, do a story or something. We had no idea what we were doing, at least I didn't, and we called the Boston Phoenix, I think Marion did, and she talked him into getting a press pass, and we went, I don't even remember the story was ever run, but we went on the Phoenix, sort of assigned us, they didn't really pay, but anyway, we spent an hour backstage while Dolly waited for her, because she only sang a few songs in the Porter Wagoner show, so we got to meet her and spend some time with her, it was great.
Wow. That photograph, you can see on our website, wgbhnews.org, there's a couple of photographs from the book. And I should also mention there's an exhibition of your work, which is up as well. So if people want to go and see this for themselves, definitely you can get your hands on the book, but you can also go see this here in Boston up through October 27th, I believe. And that's at the Carroll and Sons Art Gallery.
Which is in the South End on Harrison Avenue. And there's going to be another music event on the 27th, also at the gallery and at J.J. Foley's afterwards.
There you go.
If you can come by there.
Excellent. So, one of the photos in this that sort of jumps out at me is another one of these kind of country music of one of the country musicians, and this is a little bit more of a staged photograph, and this is a photo that you took of Ernest Tubb. And I want to hear a little bit, Driving Nails in My Coffin, which is an Ernest Tubb tune. And let's hear a little bit of that, and maybe you can tell me the story behind that photograph.
My sweetheart has gone and I'm so lonely. She said that she and I were through. So I started out drinking for pastime, driving nails in my coffin over you.
Now, what strikes me about this photograph is Ernest Tubb does not seem to appear in this photograph.
Ah, right. I was just going to say that. You killed my line there.
Oh, sorry.
Well, it's funny. I just saw his, grandnephew or something, Lucky Tubb, who's a wonderful singer who's out touring now. But anyway, yeah, he's just gathered, all his fans are kind of gathered around him. And I love the picture because it really says so much about the fans and the relationship of the fans and the stars in those days. It was very intimate. These people like Ernest Tubb and Hank Snow and Webb Pierce and people who were stars of that, Kitty Wells, who just passed away, were stars of that era. They would go to these places every year, and the fans would know them, and they would know the fans. I mean, impossible today. But you'd go to a show, a Kitty Wells show at the Lone Star Ranch or the Indian Ranch, and Kitty would ask one of the fans how their kids are. You know, how come you didn't bring your kid up today? You know, you can imagine that, Tim McGraw saying that to a fan. But so I just decided to have the fans gathered around Ernest, and he was, I think, signing autographs or something with his bus in the background. Yeah,
it's a great picture. Great picture. We could do this all day, but I want to talk about one more photograph, and that's one that you did of a legitimate music legend, and that's Jerry Lee Lewis, which was taken here in this area. And Jerry Lee Lewis, of course, is well known in rock and roll annals, Great Balls of Fire and everything else he did. But I want to hear a little bit of a tune of his, which is called What's Made Milwaukee Famous, which gives you a little sense of what he could do when he really went country. Let's hear that.
It's late and she's waiting, and I know I should go home. But every time I start to leave, they play another song, and someone buys a
Another. I mean, that vocal is off the charts. Off the charts. But tell us a little bit about the photograph.
Well, I was thinking about, as you were saying that, I was thinking about that show, and it's a longer story than we have time for. But basically, Jerry Lee was one of these guys that could hold an audience like nobody else. There's some musicians, some entertainers, some politicians we've learned this week who can just hold a stage. And Jerry Lee was, you know, that kind of guy. And I was thinking he could hold his note as well as he holds a stage. I mean, he just stretched that thing out. But yeah. but Jerry Lee was always a country singer. He was part of the Sun Records roster as well, discovered by Cowboy Jack Clement, a portrait of Cowboy Jack's in the book as well. And he produced and engineered for Sun Records back in those days. And he discovered Jerry Lee. And Jerry Lee was a gospel singer and a country singer, and he had some hit records, which we all know, Great Balls of Fire and songs like that, and then had a little problem with a marriage to to what we consider an underage these days, cousin.
Relative,
I'm not sure that that's how they looked at it in Faraday, Louisiana. But anyway, so then I got to, he was back in the country circuit and played the Ramada Inn near Logan Airport, and that was when I got that picture. It was great.
There you go. A little bit about the importance of the city of Boston in this area in the history of country music, captured in photographs by Henry Hornstein. Thank you so much for stopping by, talking music and photography with us today.
Thanks a lot. Come to the show tonight if you can.
There you go. Come to the show tonight. You can see Henry's photos at that gallery, the Carroll & Sons Art Gallery, through October 27th. More details about that on our website, wgbhnews.org, where, as I said, you can see some of the photographs and you can listen to some of the music that we sampled here today and some other hand-selected music from Henry. Well, Callie, Henry has a few photos in his book taken right as the bars were closing, and it looks like it's closing time for us here as well.
You know the song. You don't have to go home, but you got to get out of here. Thanks for joining us for another edition of Boston Public Radio. Tune in on Monday for Politics as Usual and a preview of this year's television season. I'm Callie Crossley. Boston Public Radio is a production of WGBH.